can't get enough eye-popping, jaw-dropping, heart-stopping reality TV.
It's the best.
Then head to Hey You, home of reality on demand. Stream and download the latest episodes from shows like Keeping Up with the Kardashians and The Real Housewives, same day as the US.
What's more fun than that?
Or binge old faves like The Simple Life and The Hills.
That's hot.
Hey You. Reality on demand. Start your 1 month free trial now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast, the official podcast of slashfilm.com. I'm David Chen, and with me is
Jeff Cannata.
And joining us later is going to be Devinder Hardwar. He's just a little bit late to our recording today, but we had some time constraints, so we had to start a little bit early. But joining us also for this bonus episode.
Yella is what it is. Yella.
Okay, I'm not sure that's right, but joining us also for this podcast is Peter Serretta, editor-in-chief at slashfilm.com. Peter, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm glad to be back because it seems like this is my vindication appearance, Dave.
Yeah, totally, totally. I mean, this is the appearance where you are riding into the city looking over all that you have conquered. It's going to be awesome. Jermaine Lucier is also here. He is a writer at io9/Gizmodo. Jermaine, welcome back to the Slash Filmcast. How are you doing, Jermaine?
I am good, Dave. Thanks. Glad we're getting this done. It's earlier than last year, I believe.
Right? Yeah, we waited less than 5 months after the Summer Movie Wager happened.
Yeah, only like 3 months, so that's pretty...
It's been about a month, so we're actually doing pretty good time. This is one of our most requested episodes of the year.
But in our defense, one of us, and I'm not going to say who, created a human life. So that's true. That's true, Peter. Congratulations.
Wait, Jeff, your wife is not on the podcast. What's going on?
I know, but I helped.
All right, guys. So we are here with a Slash Filmcast bonus episode to talk about the follow-up to our Summer Movie Wager 2016. For those who don't know, the Summer Movie Wager is a game whereby each of us tried to predict what the top 10 movies of the summer were by domestic box office gross. Basically, how the rules work is you get 10 points if you choose a movie dead on at the correct ranking, 7 points if your pick was only one spot away from where it ended up, 5 points if it was two spots away, 3 points if your pick was anywhere in the top 10, and 1 point for each dark horse candidate that you choose that made it into the top 10, and everyone gets 3 dark horse candidates. I should also point out that if you get 1 or 10 dead on, you get a bonus 3 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
They're weighted, at 13 rather than 10.
That's right.
The top spot and the bottom spot.
So this means that, hypothetically speaking, if everyone on the podcast chose the same movie for number one and one person chose something different and that choice was correct, then that person would have an outsized advantage because they would have plus 3 over everyone else, right?
That would almost guarantee them. That would guarantee them.
Actually, they would have more than plus 3. They would have
six.
Yeah, plus 6. Yeah. They'd have a 6-point advantage because not only would they have gotten number 1 dead on, but everyone else wouldn't have gotten number 1 dead on, right?
Basically, what you got to know is that the points are distributed in a way that this is completely scientific, and the person that knows the best of how can see into the future the best gets the highest score.
Yeah, now I have constantly said over Jeff Cannata's strenuous objections that the rules are absolutely ludicrous and don't actually do a good job of predicting your box office prognostication skills. But, let's just say that there's going to be a lot of trash talking and none of us are really taking the game super seriously. Now, we made an agreement, gents, at the beginning of the summer that when we did this podcast, whoever won would be able to tell everyone else to watch a movie or a TV show less than 3 hours long. So that is what is at stake on this year's Summer Movie Wager. So
are we going to come back here and review?
Maybe. Maybe we will. If it's requested enough. Which, by the way, I have a feeling this one will be requested. So,
Oh, no.
So that being said, gentlemen, I think a good way to start this episode is we're going to start by talking about a choice that each of us made that we thought was really great, that we're like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy I got that. I'm really proud of myself for making that choice. And separately, a choice that we made that we think was absolutely horrible.
Dave, I have to step in here for a second. We can't.
the elephant in the room, we have to start with the fact that every single one of us picked Captain America Civil War number one, except one person.
That's right.
One person had the balls, and we all laughed at that person.
We did.
We all mocked that person when that person said Finding Dory was going to outgross Captain America Civil War. We thought, what? History proves that the Pixar movie is not going to do that. You're insane. You just threw the game in the garbage. Peter Serretta.
We thought it was madness.
I thought it was madness. I was just like taking a big chance, and it paid off. Finding Dory beat Captain America by like 75 million.
It didn't just beat Captain America. It crushed Captain America. It was not close.
Decisively. So for those who are curious, Finding Dory grossed $482 million domestically.
And in our time period window, which is
in the
important
time period window, right? And actually, there was actually, by the way, gents, there was actually a significant difference in terms of when precisely the cutoff happened this year, because I think we cut it off after Labor Day. But if it had been like one day earlier, if we had cut it off like Sunday night, you know, because that's usually when you tally weekend grosses, then I think like Ghostbusters wouldn't have gotten to where it was on the chart. So every day makes a difference in this chart. But yeah, domestic gross for Finding Dory this summer was $482 million. That is almost $80 million more than Captain America Civil War.
That is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 more.
Yeah, that's true. That's an entire extra movie. You're right.
Yeah. It's an Alice Through the Looking Glass more. It's a Purge 3 more.
That's Purge 3 made a little bit more than that, didn't it?
$80 million. Those are all movies
in the 80s. Okay. No, good point. So, all right. So, Peter, that was obviously a stroke of brilliance by you, right?
That was like Babe Ruth walking up to the plate, pointing at the stands. He had told the little boy sick in the bed the day before that he was going to do it, and everybody laughed at him. I have to give you mad props, Peter.
Now, only if the rest of my list was as dead on as that.
So what's a choice that you made, Peter, that you're not super proud of?
You know, there's two, Dave. I hate to take more time, but there's two. The number one has to be Independence Day Resurgence, which I had at number four. I thought maybe there would be more nostalgia for, you know, that film. It kind of bombed.
It wasn't a catastrophe. It was not a catastrophe, but it only made $103 million domestically.
It would have had to make $200 million more.
That's a catastrophe for that movie. That movie cost $250 million.
Yeah, that's right. Fair enough.
It did well overseas, but on our scale, it would have had to make $200 million more to hit where I wanted it to hit.
Yeah. So,
that's a failure.
And it did not crack the top 10, we should point out. So, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And the other thing that I feel like I was way off on, even though it's only a few points off, is Secret Life of Pets. I totally underestimated Illumination Entertainment. And I put it at number 7 on my list, but that was, you know, it was much higher than that. So.
Secret Life of Pets, rounding up the top three with $359 million domestic gross. So it did very, very well. So Peter put it at number 7. Not horrible. You at least had it in your top 10, Peter. So don't be too hard on yourself. How about you, Jermaine Lucier? What are you most proud of on this list?
You know what? Nothing. I'm right in the middle of the pack here. I'm right in the middle of the pack. I have a couple okay ones, a couple bad ones. I have nothing I'm proud of. I'm proud that I didn't come in last place. That's the only thing I'm proud of.
You know, Jermaine, you're selling yourself short. You're selling yourself short.
Because
you chose Central Intelligence as a movie in the top 10. No one else even had it in their top 10.
Okay. Yeah,
and Central Intelligence, you chose it as what, your number 7? And it was, in fact, number 8 with $127 million. So that was a very good call on your part.
Well, thank you. And I guess that's okay. But like I said, like to me, and I guess I'm really upset that I totally whiffed on Jason Bourne, didn't even put it as a dark horse. I mean, if I put it on the list, I probably would have come in second or third place, or I already was third place. And also, I'm with Peter on the Independence Day bandwagon. Though I don't regret making that decision because I thought it was going to be a big hit. I mean, I think if the movie was, I mean, the movie's like a 3 out of 10. If that movie was a 5 out of 10, it probably would have made another $150 million. It's just such a terrible movie, which, you know, is usually what happens during the summer. You're like, oh, that movie's going to be good, and they're never good. They're very, very rarely good. And so I think I'm with Peter that that's the one I'm most ashamed. I'm not actually as ashamed, but I agree with him. And then Jason Bourne, most ashamed. And if you say Central Intelligence, I'll take it. The Rock and Kevin Hart came through. I also was the only person to mention The Conjuring, which just barely cracked 100 million. So that wasn't bad either, as a dark horse.
Yeah. Well, no one else called it, but yeah, we underestimated the combination of – well, I think we overestimated a lot of other movies, and we underestimated the potent mix of Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Kevin Hart.
The movie that we all owe an apology to is The Legend of Tarzan.
Yeah. I mean, not all of us, Jeff, but –
No, sir, all of us.
Well,
you put
it as
a dark horse.
I chose
Dave.
It as a dark horse, Jeff.
Yeah,
so that means I at least
that's not. Come on.
No, I refuse to concede that putting it as a dark horse does not, in some way, acknowledge that it could be.
I mean,
I'm with Dave here because if you look at the domestic grosses, right, like it is radically top heavy. So it's Legend of Tarzan making 126 million. If you had said that it's going to make 126 million, you'd be like, oh, that's not cracking the top 10.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's a chance that could not have cracked the top 10 with that number. It did because Dory, Captain America, Secret Life all were so big.
Everyone
you know?
Spent their money on Dory, Captain America, and Secret Life. Like, and they didn't spend their money on anything. Like, there's a huge, huge drop-off between number 4 and number 5 on the list.
It doubles it. Jason Bourne, 150, and Suicide Squad did 300. There's nothing made $200 million.
It's
That's
crazy.
That's usually the sweet spot.
Crazy, crazy, yeah. So, anyway, Jeff, you were saying about how all of you guys messed up the Tarzan guess?
I mean, okay, you put it as a dark horse. La-ti-da. But, I mean, for the most part, we all wildly underestimated that Tarzan could pull in top 10 numbers. It didn't make that much less than Star Trek or X-Men, which we all thought were gimmies for the top 10, right? So, you know, it's kind of impressive that that little movie – and we certainly did a heck of a lot better than a lot of movies that were on people's lists. So
Yeah.
So that's your biggest embarrassment, Jeff. Like,
No.
Okay.
My list is a dumpster fire.
it truly is horrible.
Is an embarrassment. My son is embarrassed of my list.
All right, so Jeff, what are you most proud of on your list?
Well, I did get one right on. I nailed Ghostbusters at number 9. So I guess if I had to, you know, be happy with myself for anything, you know, I did that.
That's considered a bomb in Hollywood. The 126 million. They're not. Yeah. They're like shit canning the whole franchise.
Yeah,
but it was nice of you to hit it there.
I did. I knew that there was going to be another animated movie toward the top, and I thought it was going to be Ice Age instead of Secret Life of Pets. Dear God, why?
Which is a choice I warned you off about immediately when you said
on
the podcast.
I mean, that is the lowest.
Where's Ice Age? Wow.
That is the lowest movie for the highest guess of anybody's list. Like that movie scored lower than any other movie that's on anyone's list, and I put it higher than any movie that's off the list.
To be fair, Jeff, okay, I'm trying to be very encouraging here before the trash talking begins later on.
Mm. Yes.
But to be fair,
so this isn't trash talking.
This is not trash talking. This is not the worst choice ever made in the history of the Summer Movie Wager.
You still own that. No, actually, Alex Albrecht.
No. That is Alex Albrecht.
Yeah.
Who I believe in 2010 guessed that MacGruber
would be number 2.
I can't even say it without breaking up. guessed that MacGruber would be the third highest grossing movie of the summer. In fact, it only made $8 million. and ranked it around 50th place.
Yeah. So we're all living in the MacGruber curve right now. We get graded on a curve. MacGruber saves us all. And yet, I am so embarrassed of my Ice Age prediction. I am the only person that what else did I do incredibly stupidly? I put Suicide Squad at number 10 like an idiot. I really wildly – What I did there was I weighted the
date of release much too heavily. But it was obvious even from last year that Guardians of the Galaxy was in the same time period, and I'm just so stupid that I didn't learn from that. So, yeah, no, there's a lot of things I did wrong.
Well, you know, I'm going to say a few things about myself, guys, that I think I did right. You know, I know I said we'd only say one thing we did right, but really, at one point during the Summer Movie Wager, I was running away with this competition a crazy amount because despite missing number one and two, Peter got that right. I guessed Captain America Civil War would be number one and Finding Dory would be number two. The true ranking was reversed. Despite missing that, I almost got five choices dead on.
Almost.
Almost.
You got two choices dead on.
I was so close to getting almost five choices dead on. And we'll go into like how – well, I'll just say right now that how it happened.
Two is very impressive, Dave. You don't have to – two is very impressive.
Any one of them almost. Is impressive. If you get one of them, it's impressive. You know, yeah. Two is good. Yeah.
it was talking almost.
It was almost five, but Jason Bourne – came from behind to beat out not only X-Men Apocalypse, but also Star Trek Beyond, which I don't think any of us could have predicted.
Oh, squeaked in, too, if you look at the numbers. It's like a million and a half.
Exactly. Like that's literally like almost like the Labor Day might have made the difference between, you know,
Jason
Bourne. If we
had not gone to see it, you probably would have.
yeah. If we hadn't gone to see it because of the Slash Filmcast, like it might have, I might have had an even more decisive, you know, plus points from these choices. So I'm pretty proud of that murderer's row of choices between 3 through 7 that I got.
But you don't have to talk about almost, Dave.
All right, fair enough,
you
Jeff.
Fine enough, nailing two, dead on, and it goes to show, you know, even though number one and number 10 are weighted more. You can still cobble together enough points in that middle area.
Yeah, to do pretty well. Exactly. Yeah.
All summer I kept saying, oh, Peter hits Dory, he's going to win Walking Away. I kept saying that like an idiot on Twitter. And
well, we'll see. We have not revealed the true winner yet.
Right. But you know,
I think we have.
I don't know about
people
that.
People follow, they know.
Anyway.
The thing that's so impressive about your list, Dave, to give you some props, is how few – you only have really one movie that you picked that didn't make the top 10 at all, whereas the rest of us missed movies much more. The only movie you failed to recognize was Central Intelligence,
right,
and you put Independence Day in your list. So that was there's only one movie spot that didn't actually end up in the top 10 in some order, and that's ridiculously hard to do. You, regardless of the order that you put them in, you named 9 of the 10 correct films.
Wow, what is going? Jeff complimenting me. What is happening here?
Yeah,
I don't.
You know,
I'm not
so
familiar with Insensation.
So did Devendra, guys. You got 9 of the 10 if you count the Dark Horse.
That's true. That's true. So okay.
And just for the record, I'm the one with the most misses. I missed 3.
Yeah, that's true.
So I would say that my biggest disappointment was completely miscalculating the Ice Age performance. Like, I thought Ice Age was gonna – I was so convinced that Ice Age would come in squarely at number 10 that I would just completely nail that choice. But I did not. I did not.
Number 10 is way harder to do than 1.
Exactly. But that's why I was like, sure. I've threaded the needle. You know, I have done the impossible. I've chosen Ice Age at number 10. In fact, Ice Age did not do very well. It only grossed, let's see, $62 million. So it is way off from the top 10. So that's kind of my biggest embarrassment, is choosing the wrong number 10.
I'm not sure if we mentioned that if Jeff had put Secret Life of Pets instead of Ice Age, he would have...
done a lot better.
He would have ended up in number 2.
Yeah, he would have done a lot better. Well,
and you know, honestly, Peter, that is literally a thought that there's a version of my list with a line crossed out that threw Secret Life of Pets in number 3. I knew I was going to put an animated film, and it was either Secret Life of Pets, Ice Age, or Angry Birds, and I was kind of figuring out which one it was, and I just wildly got that wrong.
Yeah. So joining us now is Slash Filmcast co-host Devendra Hardware. Devendra, welcome. Sorry we had to start a little bit early without you, but Peter and Jermaine got to get going soon.
It's okay.
And we were just talking about our favorite choice, like one that we're proud of on the top 10 and one that we feel very embarrassed by. So what would you say on your summer movie wager list is something that you're pretty proud of?
I think Angry Birds did end up making a lot of money. And I think we didn't count that as much.
You put Angry Birds in your top 10. It did not make the top 10.
Top three.
Your top three. Angry Birds made $107 million, so it was not a disaster. And
number
I think 11. Like we all specifically I ridiculed you that you know Angry Birds.
I believe I did as well.
Yeah, that Angry Birds is going to be horrible, and you should be ashamed of yourself, and may God have mercy on your soul. And Angry Birds actually didn't do that badly. So good on you for that. Jermaine was also pointing out that you had actually you actually chose pretty much like 9 out of the top 10 movies like were on your list. Mm-hmm. Perhaps not in the best order, but they were on there in some form. So that was pretty good.
All right.
Anything that you looking back on, you're like, oh man, I really shouldn't have put that on there. Yeah. You did choose Free State of Jones as a dark horse candidate.
Nothing.
I was just arguing earlier that it does mean a lot, but you know, whatevs.
Does it count towards points?
It does if you get it. It does.
You get one measly point.
You get one point.
That's not super helpful.
Yeah, you chose Free State of Jones. Free State of Jones, in fact, was number 36 out of the entire box office list. Overall, you know, Devendra, you and Jeff had a solid list. You know, guys, I recall. That last year, you know, like the highest number of points last year was basically like the lowest number of points this year. So I think this year we've done a lot better, right? Good on you guys for that.
exciting revelation.
Last year I got
foot to drop on this conversation.
Last year I got 45 points. I was the number one player last year, and this year the lowest ranked players are 45 points. So. Anyway, all right. Well, let's.
I don't remember that.
I'm telling you that is what happened.
I believe you. I put it out of my head.
I know you refused to believe that I won last year, Jermaine.
It did not happen.
So let's count down the top 10 of the summer. Before we do that, though, I do want to give a shout out to the people who helped us to make this year's Summer Movie Wager much more entertaining.
Oh, man. Amazing, amazing amount of work and awesomeness. It really did make it much more entertaining this year.
So Paul Baker created a site. You can find that at thesummermoviewager.com. And also a gentleman named Dennis also had a site. I'll link to it in the show notes, but it's basically smoview.a2hosted.com. And I'll link to it in the show notes because that's hard to remember. Dennis really attacked this in a way that was intense and was entertaining, and it really made it into like a week by week fun game. He created a Twitter account where he like graphed, you know, a lot of people's distribution and all that kind of stuff. Like it was amazing. So I would recommend his Twitter account, Some Movie W. That's SUM Movie W. And also
makes me want to do like a winter movie wager, guys.
Yeah,
that makes me want to make
winter movie wager. I think there's also a possibility that other people could get involved next year. Like listeners could get involved next year. We're looking into that. So
annual, we could do a whole year too. Come on, guys, we go crazy.
Yeah. So just wanted to give a shout out to those folks. As like really helping out and making this like way more fun than even it would have otherwise been, which was already very fun. So, thanks so much, you guys. Really appreciate it. And we wouldn't have been able to record the podcast this early without you because we probably wouldn't have been able to calculate the results. So let's get into the actual top 10. Number one, Finding Dory, $482 million domestic. As we've already talked about, Peter called this. He did an amazing job. You know, I think we all expected this to be big. I don't think any of us could have expected it to be this big. This was this year's like Jurassic World, right? I mean, it was a movie that ran away with the title, and like it wasn't just like a slight victory. It was like a massive victory over Captain America: Civil War. Absolutely. Now, my question for you guys is, do you feel like the movie actually deserved that title of number one movie this summer? Jeff Cannata?
I mean, it's a lovely film, very crowd pleasing movie. I think overall the list of movies this year, and you know, I tend to say this most years, sadly, really mostly bad movies. Even the movies that I thought were going to be home runs as far as quality, like Jason Bourne, it's not so good. Not so good. A lot of disappointments.
Peter Serretta, do you feel like the Finding Dory deserved the number one spot?
I think it's good populist entertainment. I think I like Captain America more, but I think Finding Dory you can show to almost anybody and they'll at least enjoy it. Like, I think it's probably the most enjoyable to wide audiences, which I think makes sense that it's number one.
Yeah. Any thoughts, Devendra or Jermaine?
I mean, I barely remember that movie. I remember liking it, but that is a weird... That's one of those weird movies like, oh, yeah, I like that thing. And there was a fish and she was found, right?
There's some shells. I remember shells were laid out. And then there was, like, those seals that were on the rock that, like...
There was an octopus.
That super offensive thing about... mentally handicapped people. I remember that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It's just like good old classic Pixar fun.
I think you guys are understating this. That movie, I feel like a lot of people got emotional in that movie. Is that up there with Pixar's greatest movies? No, but like a movie that can make people cry is not what you guys are reducing it to.
It's not hard
to make a good movie.
It's a good movie, but it's also not that hard to make people cry.
Yeah, Devendra does it every day.
All the time. In my IMs with David Chen.
That's right. all right, Captain America, Civil War. This was a movie that we all obviously thought would be number one, four quadrant film. But I think it's safe to say that we all really love this movie, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyone didn't like I thought it's a great entry into the Marvel franchise, great entry into the Captain America saga. A real crowd pleaser. I think here's something that I'll observe about Captain America: Civil War is a lot of people were making fun of Lex Luthor's plan in Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice, like that was a preposterous plan. I think Daniel Brühl's plan in Captain America: Civil War was equally ridiculous.
I guess, but he won, so joke's on us.
But you know, the movie is so much more fun. The action is so well choreographed and staged and has so many kind of interesting concepts that I think you're able to look past that kind of stuff.
And Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man. So
I feel like going back to Jeff's point a little bit about Dory as well as Civil War, it comes down to like I think both those movies you walked out of the theater feeling good about. And most people. I know like, you know, Dory, I think more people like Civil War overall than Dory. But like if you look at those two movies opposed to the rest of the list, money aside – I feel like those two movies people generally liked, and most of the other movies, you know, like people like, you know, like in their 30s didn't really like. I mean, mm-hmm. I know a lot of kids love The Secret Life of Pets. I thought it was a piece of crap, you know, but like, and then that sort of goes for everything below here almost. I mean,
yeah, but you know what? The thing about The Secret Life of Pets is the marketing for that movie was insane.
No, it was
like,
great.
It was just like Suicide Squad, and I know those are the next two movies, and we're going to go after them, but those two marketing campaigns were, like, top-notch. Like, yeah, I wanted to see both those
totally,
movies.
Totally, but I'm saying, like, I think Dory and Captain America each had good campaigns and also delivered on them way more than the next two, and that sort of is why they sort of are those top two films, you know? And we all knew they were going to be the top two films, and just so they delivered on the promise of a good movie where most of the rest of the list is not, I believe.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, Secret Life of Pets, and number four, Suicide Squad. And I think several of us did predict that, you know, these movies would do pretty well. Peter, you had a pretty close call for Suicide Squad. Devendra as well. I don't know if you guys remember, I got both of these choices dead on, giving me 20 points.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't remember, and more importantly, I won't remember next year.
Well, that is a shame.
Everyone take a shot every time Dave says something super smug this episode. Because
you'll be drunk before the – hey, Devendra, we're not spoiling that yet. All right. Okay. So
I think everybody has figured it out.
So
based on your general – on the internet, Dave.
Your general attitude.
Jason Bourne do we want to say anything about Suicide Squad other than that this is an example of a movie where, again, I think the marketing was great. The trailers were awesome and sold a movie. And, you know – Freaking Jermaine Lucier. Lucier freaking called this when we recorded the Summer Movie Wager earlier on this year. He said, I don't think David Ayer can make the kind of movie that you're seeing in the trailers. And he was completely right. And that's why the final film feels completely cobbled together.
And it still made $300 million because we all got duped. And we're like, oh, it's cool. It's going to be a cool superhero movie. Oh, it can't be. And then I think like the negative reviews almost worked for it in a way. Because people are like, no, it can't be that bad. You know, and went to see it. You know, like everybody I know saw that. Where I can't tell you one person outside of the four of us, maybe, who saw the Legend of Tarzan. You know what I mean? Like, but I could like everybody saw Suicide
Squad. Somebody had to.
I know that's it's crazy. But Suicide Squad was just everybody was so curious about. There's so many elements. Like it was either oh, I got to see Margot Robbie, or I got to see Jared Leto, or, oh, Batman's in that. How do I see Batman? There's so many entry points for people that the fact that it sucked didn't matter once you paid that money.
Here's a big surprise. Number five, Jason Bourne, $156 million. Huh. Some of us predicted that Jason Bourne would be top 10. I don't think any of us predicted it would be this high. I'm actually still surprised that Jason Bourne beat out X-Men Apocalypse, Star Trek Beyond, and Ghostbusters. I did not think that it had the staying power, but people like their Matt Damon kicking ass no matter how terrible the movie is. I mean, I don't think any of us were really big fans of this movie, correct?
Nope. I mean, and also there's this terrible. And X-Men Apocalypse, two very surprising failures, which still made a shit ton of money. So
I don't know if it's a really even a shit ton. Like X-Men Apocalypse, $155 million. That's
okay.
That is not a well-performing X-Men film. You know, if you think about X-Men Days of Future Past, like that movie performed much better. So I think the studio, Fox, was expecting a lot more from this movie. Days of Future Past, by the way, made $233 million. So compared to X-Men Apocalypse, $155 million, that is a big come down.
It's scary that basically there's four movies in that came out this summer that did well.
Yeah.
You know, based on the sort of scale we're talking about, the scale we're talking about now with summer blockbusters, how much money these movies cost to make and to market – there's really just four movies in the entire summer that you can call a success, a resounding success. That's kind of scary.
Based on their budget, because there's a lot of, like, if you look at a movie like Bad Moms, that's a resounding success. It costs like $3 million or something.
Right.
But I know
what you mean. Don't Breathe, you know, way down the list, Don't Breathe is a massive success.
The big Hollywood wide release, you're 100% right. Four movies are a success.
Yeah.
And even Jason Bourne, the number five movie, is probably considered a failure by too universal.
Yeah, we saw a lot of articles this summer about sequel fatigue. And if you look at this list, and you especially look at the movies that didn't even make the top 10, like Conjuring 2, Independence Day, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Purge, Alice the Looking Glass. I mean, they're all sequels.
Neighbors 2, yeah.
Now You See Me 2, Ice Age, whatever.
Ice Age 15.
Neighbors, yeah.
Free State of Jones.
I was very surprised that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles did so poorly.
Yeah.
Especially because I'm one of the few people who actually liked it. I hate the first one, and I thought this one was fun.
Movie, but people were so turned off by the first probably that they didn't want to come out for the second or, you know, who knows. But, I do think it was a bloodbath at the box office this summer. It does feel like there was a lot of failures and a lot of reevaluation that needs to go on. I think the biggest come down is probably Alice Through the Looking Glass. You know, that is a movie where the first movie made over $1 billion worldwide, and this one did not do nearly as well.
I put it at six on my list because I thought, you know, $1 billion, it has to have some resonance. Like, it has to have some cultural impact, right, Jeff?
Turns out no.
Yeah,
no.
Alice in Wonderland in 2010 made $334 million domestic, which would have put it as number four on this year's list if it was playing this year. And it made $1 billion worldwide. And Alice Through the Looking Glass made $77 million domestic and $300 million worldwide. That is a come down of $700 million. They thought they would make $700 million more than they made with Alice Through the Looking Glass. Yeah, at least. You know, ideally, Alice Through the Looking Glass makes more money than the original. So, you know, I didn't actually see the movie. Did any of you actually?
I didn't either.
No. Oh, it's horrible. Okay.
It was terrible. Like, it deserves to make that little money. But, I mean, I don't think it's any worse than the last one. The last one is really bad, too, but I think that one it came out sort of – it was probably like the next big 3D movie after Avatar. Yeah. And people sort of love that about it. And now this is like years later and nobody gives a crap anymore and it just didn't deliver. I mean it's better than the first one, which isn't saying much, but it's still really bad.
You know what the weird thing is? I see people all the time wearing Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton movie, like merchandise, like T-shirts and like, you know, the stuff that they sell on Hot Topic. Mostly in my closet, mostly at Disneyland. But like I do see people that were fans of that first film. It's weird that this movie did so badly.
I would argue that they're fans of the graphic design of the first movie.
Yeah,
it's, you know, the image of Tim of what's his name? You know, the actor.
Johnny Depp. Nice.
I have a child now, so I don't sleep. Anyway, the image of Johnny Depp as the Mad Hatter is it's a t-shirt worthy image, you know, but not necessarily a film.
So Scott Mendelson at Forbes.com wrote an article about this. Alice Through the Looking Glass grossed over $700 million less than Alice in Wonderland. If you take domestic grosses, Alice 2 made $256 million less in North America than the original film, not accounting for inflation. There are only 94 films in the history of mankind that have grossed even $256 million total. That is the difference in gross between Alice 1 and Alice 2. And then total, it earned $738 million less than Alice 1, which is like the entire worldwide gross of Gravity or Up. So the magnitude of the failure of this sequel is pretty staggering to behold. Anyway, a lot of sequels got punished this year, and we'll see if Hollywood learns any lessons from that. Number seven, Star Trek Beyond, $155 million. This is also a movie that earned way less than I think people were expecting. I mean, it earned less than Star Trek Into Darkness, and it's widely regarded as a better film than Star Trek Into Darkness, right? I think all of us thought this was like an enjoyable blockbuster. Any disagreement there?
Nope.
Yeah, nope. We all liked the movie, and it unfortunately didn't do very well, and I'm worried that there's not going to be a fourth. But yeah, Star Trek Into Darkness grossed $228 million domestically, $467 worldwide. This movie only grossed $155 million. So that, again,
are you really worried there won't be another one?
Yeah, yeah.
They announced the fourth one, but I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that they're waiting for the home video sales to come in. And
see, I have to say, like, this is one of the few movies this summer I can't wait to rewatch at some point.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking it out again. But, yeah, unfortunately did not do super well. A lot of us did have it pretty close on the list. Most of us got 7 points off Star Trek Beyond, which came in at number seven. Central Intelligence, number eight. Only person who had it on their list at all was Jermaine Lussier.
That's right.
And did you enjoy the film, Jermaine? Did you see it?
I did see it. It was okay. I honestly forgot. If you ask me what the plot of it is right now, I couldn't tell you. I remember laughing a little bit during it. And, you know, it was one of those things I saw like at a $7 matinee. And I was like, oh, cool. That was great. What are we going for lunch? And I never thought about it again until this very moment, which is okay for some movies. You know, I think that movie didn't really aspire to – it probably aspired to a little bit more than that, but, you know, it doesn't need to be more than that. And, I mean, I think it probably is considered a hit at $127 million. Maybe not a big hit, but, you know, did okay.
Yeah. Central Intelligence number eight. Number nine, Ghostbusters. Peter, I think you were the one that ranked this the highest on your list, right?
Did I? Yeah, I guess I did.
Yeah, you chose it as number six. A lot of us chose it as number, you know, 9 or 10. Jeff chose it dead on at number 9. This is a movie I mean, Peter, you really went on a warpath about this movie as much as
– I didn't go on a warpath.
As much as Peter Serretta – you know, Peter Serretta, guys, for those who don't know, is one of the nicest people in the world. He's, like, very kind. And so for Peter to write an article on SlashFilm.com saying why Ghostbusters, you know, was a disappointment – is says a lot, I think, you know, like, just because he would not normally do that unless he was really disappointed with
it. Well, the thing about this movie too is it became all about the you know, it being the girl Ghostbusters movie, and if you had any criticisms about it, you were sexist. And and I was a person, as you know, I was on the podcast, I've been like,
you've been championing.
Yeah, I've been championing this film. So when I went and saw it, and I saw it at the premiere, I was so disappointed, Dave. I mean, as a fan, I know you're not a fan of the original Ghostbusters, or you don't hold it as highly
correct
in esteem as I do. And maybe that is the problem. Maybe I do hold that. Maybe it is that I am so nostalgic for that movie.
Yeah, me.
But
It's weird, Pete, because I hold it in pretty high esteem too, but there was something about it. I liked it. It was probably on this list of the top 10, probably my third favorite movie behind, you know, Dory and Civil War. I hold it in reverence, but I think I was able to compartmentalize a little bit, to add, if I can add another syllable. Just because I liked where it you know, where it alluded to the other movies, but it really tried to stand on its own.
See, that's maybe, my problem is it didn't right. try to
Yeah,
stand
I don't agree with you at all, Jermaine. I thought it was slavish.
No, it's slavish to some of like the iconography, but the action of it is way more action. There's way more comedy, and I think the first one's funnier.
Yeah, but the comedy is cheap sitcom jokes. They're not they don't have anything to do with ghostbusting or oh no.
Sure, I disagree. I think of all of us, I'm the one that liked it the most. Yeah. And I adore the first Ghostbusters movie. It shaped my childhood in a very, very strong way. I mean, I quote Ghostbusters almost daily. And I loved it. I thought it was great. I went in after hearing Peter's opinion really worried I wasn't going to like it, and I just had a blast. I think – and I've said this before, but I will reiterate it here. I think there's a joke right at the beginning that is a fart joke, and if you laugh at that joke, you're in. The whole movie is going to be – you're going to be loving the movie. If you think that joke is stupid – you're out. You will not like that movie. And I think Jeff, that's just like – I know. You didn't like that moment, right?
I will agree with you on that one.
Yeah. That moment came up. I laughed. And from that point on, I was like, I'm in this. I'm in it. This is going to be fun. I think it's like this litmus test right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. I think Devendra made a nice distinction about Star Trek, saying that's the movie he's most excited to revisit. For me, it's Ghostbusters, because I really, really mm-hmm. enjoyed it. And I'm excited to watch it again. And I'm sure I was laughing so hard I missed things. You know, and references and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
I am excited for you guys to realize it's not a great movie.
Oh, wow. All right.
It's done, Pete.
Number 10. Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I can't help but imagine that this movie is regarded as a financial disaster. It made – even though it's number 9, it only made $125 million worldwide. And mm-hmm. – I'm sorry, domestically, worldwide, $228 million. That is very bad for a movie that you want to be a franchise restarter.
I mean, $100 million. See what video looks like, honestly. Like, the Ghostbusters reboot feels like something that could live on in video pretty well.
The problem is, if it really – I don't have those numbers in front of – it only made $100 million internationally.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
That's not good. It's very bad.
That's because it wasn't released in China.
Right. I think because of China's distaste for, you know, the occult and stuff like
right.
that.
Right.
Compare that
Although
to
– actually, I think it's pronounced China.
That is a Donald Trump reference. But, yeah, oh, Warcraft, on the other hand, made $47 million domestic. So, you know, that was regarded like potentially as a disaster, but made $386 million worldwide, thus saving it from being like a complete catastrophe.
So we're going to get more Warcraft movies.
Maybe. At the very least, Duncan Jones still has a career, and we're all really looking forward to his next film, Mute. But Ghostbusters, I just cannot see a world where there is a sequel to this film. But hey, Jorma Taccone's writing MacGruber 2, so who knows? Like, maybe anything could happen.
The number three movie of the summer of
2010. Yeah, if they do a low budget version of Ghostbusters, maybe it could work. Number 10, Legend of Tarzan, a movie that none of you had on any of your top 10 lists, and that only I had as a dark horse.
We all owe it an apology, including you, David.
Love you some Alexander Sarsgaard.
So I think I read an email from an astute /Homecast listener about how this movie was horribly marketed. Like, it was kind of marketed as a here, I actually have the email right now. This email comes in from Veronica, who wrote in 3 months ago. I still have this email. I recently went to an AMC theater to watch Legend of Tarzan. Before the film even started, I knew the studio had gotten it wrong. I was aware of the awful reviews, but I went in with low standards. Prior to every film, AMC airs a PSA. It makes the audience aware of exits, reminds them to keep an eye on personal belongings. Tarzan begins with a PSA that has an action film theme. Tarzan should not be marketed as an action film. The film is basically a romance novel. A good-looking, rich, shirtless man returns to the jungle and fights off beasts and men to save his love. Why this is marketed as an action movie is beyond me. They even threw in Samuel L. Jackson and gave his character in Tarzan moments and scenes to promote a body comedy. This is not Lethal Weapon. This is a story Murtaugh's wife would have written in Lethal Weapon. So anyway, I'm going to end the email there. But yeah, Veronica wrote in and basically said that they grossly mismarketed this movie. It should have been a romance. And I think, you know, a large part of the female population did, you know, resonate with this movie. And that probably drove it to have $126 million domestic. Did any of you see the movie? Did any of you enjoy it?
I saw it.
Jermaine, what'd you think?
It was horrible. I think my review on IO9 was like, Legend of Tarzan is like the Terminator if it was set in the jungle and sucked. Like, because it's really, he's just this nonstop thing that doesn't stop running, and he's always going towards the goal. It's very much like, you know, Schwarzenegger and the Terminator, where he just keeps getting shot and nobody just keeps walking forward. That's what the character reminded me of, Tarzan. He had no personality. I mean, I understand other iterations of Tarzan had that romance, but this movie has no romance. I don't know what the girl was watching. But, yeah, it's really, really bad. And I frankly, like, when I looked at this list, you know, an hour ago, I can't believe it made as much money as it did. It's crazy.
Well, that's Tarzan.
That doesn't sound like an apology.
And it was number 10. Now, we should point out a few films barely missed the top 10. Legend of Tarzan was $126 million. We have Angry Birds movie coming in at number 11. So Devendra missed out just barely on getting those points. Yeah. Bad Moms, $103 million. As Jermaine alluded to earlier, that was a
movie that none of us had on our list and nobody had as a dark horse. And I'm actually surprised, Jeff, because you usually do this competition in, like, what is going to be the kids' movie that's on those lists? What's going to be the R-rated comedy? I'm surprised that you didn't have this at least as a dark horse.
I was definitely thinking about it. You're right. I always pick it tends to be the case that there's that, you know, the marketed to women, you know, which is a legit a legit strategy. You know, that's a big force of people that are often under – marketed to during the summer months when we're getting, you know, all these testosterone explosion movies. And usually that bears fruit. And this one, you know, clearly this movie is a success. It did very, very well for based on the budget it had.
Bad Moms beat Independence Day Resurgence. Bad Moms had a budget of $20 million. Independence Day Resurgence had a budget of $165 million. So that is crazy, guys, but also, yeah, a huge success for, I think it's ATX, right, that did the studio?
STX
is the studio behind Bad Bomb, so they got a huge huge hit there, and good for them. Conjuring 2, $102 million, Sausage Party, $89 million, and then it starts to drop off real fast. But I think some big surprises for me were how low some movies that seemed like they would be hits showed up on this list, specifically Steven Spielberg's The BFG, $54 million. That's like way past number 20. You know, that's like way down there.
Yeah, you had that as a dark horse, and so did Devendra.
Yeah. Warcraft, $47 million. That was a huge bomb. And the movie cost $160 million as well, so right around the same as Independence Resurgence. And it was able to not be a disaster because of Chinese grosses. But, yeah, Warcraft way down there as well. And unfortunately, I think, like, you know, for us who like good movies, Kubo and the Two Strings, $36 million this summer.
Heartbreaker.
It's very bad. And, you know, it obviously costs way more than that to make.
It didn't make the top 10 grossing movies, but it will make my top 10 of best movies of the year for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And also another huge bomb with $24 million, Ben-Hur. That was another movie that
We all saw that coming.
Was a remake of a movie that no one cared about or wanted to see again.
That's what we needed.
One needed a Ben-Hur.
The one that breaks my heart is Popstar, because I've rewatched that a couple times on iTunes, and that movie is so damn good.
It is good.
So that movie
there's like a whole movie's worth of special features in that too, like in terms of deleted scenes. So good.
Nice. I'm waiting for that Blu-ray price to drop so I can pick it up.
Do it.
Popstar, Never Stopping, $9 million. Made about as much money as MacGruber did.
9.49, Dave. Yeah. 9.5, okay?
Made about as much money as MacGruber did, unfortunately, which is not great. Not great. So,
what are these movies above it? The Darkness? The Infiltrator? I don't even know these movies. What?
Okay. Well, Darkness was a horror movie. The Infiltrator was with Bryan Cranston.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, I was looking at Warcraft on this list, and above that is The Shallows. I'm surprised that The Shallows beat Warcraft.
I have a feeling that The Shallows' budget was a little smaller than Warcraft's budget, but that's just
I know.
One of the biggest hits of the summer is Lights Out, a movie that costs like $10 million. And as of Labor Day, had made $66 million, but like it's still going, man. It is still raking it in. And so really happy about that, because that was a movie I quite enjoyed. Currently has $67 million domestic and $147 million worldwide. So some unexpected hits. Any overall lessons we want to draw? I think, you know, the best lesson, you know, Jeff Cannata, that you mentioned when we recorded the first half of this was no one knows anything.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's right.
Including the people financing the movies. So,
yeah. Yeah.
That being said, this is you know, I asked Dennis, who put together one of the Summer Movie Wager websites, to give us some statistics before tonight's episode, and this is a year that we collectively got the second highest total number of points.
In Movie Wager history.
The highest
we've done 10 of these. It's not an insignificant sample size.
We've done 200. I'm sorry. The 2012 was 264 points total. This year, 2016, was 249 points total. That is with the same number of players each year. The average in 2012 was 52 points per player. The average this year was 49 points per player. So I don't actually think we did that bad. In fact, we did among the best that has ever been done in the Summer Movie Wager.
But do you think, Dave, that it is because there's so many sequels and there's so many – I mean, 8 out of the 10 of these movies is based on some previous property or is a sequel or remake or adaptation. Do you think it's becoming easier because now, like, this is the game – this is how the studios are
making
the movies. I don't agree.
I think our instincts are just – are good – Peter, because I think there are a ton of sequels that did horribly. I mean, did you just hear my statistics on Alice Through the Looking Glass? That's a movie that should have been a huge hit. Fortunately, someone like myself did not include it on the top 10. But, you know, like, and actually several of you didn't include it on the top 10. So, so good for those of you who didn't include it in the top 10.
You know? Mostly good for you.
Number 6. It's right where it belonged.
Yeah. So I don't know, Peter. I think this year was very surprising in a lot of ways. Didn't expect Jason Bourne to do that well. Didn't expect X-Men and Star Trek Beyond to do that badly. You know, certainly there's just a lot of surprises. Didn't expect Ghostbusters to do that badly. Didn't expect the gap between number 4 and 5 to be that huge. It's just there's a lot of surprises this year that I think were really
impressive. But I will say this, though, that some of the two biggest surprises on this list are the two movies that are not sequels, remakes, you know, based on something, and that's Secret Life of Pets and Central Intelligence. They're the two most original movies in the top 10.
Quote unquote original.
Yeah, well, original, yeah.
But and for me, the takeaway is the same as it is every summer, is do not think you're going to see good movies over the summer, ever. Like, don't ever think it. You always are like, oh, these movies are going to be good. And like I said, most of these are not good movies. Most of them, implicitly, we would agree, are not good movies. We might like some of them more than others. You know, like you might be like, oh, Jason Bourne's okay or X-Men's okay. But I think implicitly 8 of these are bad movies, maybe even, you know, probably 8.
Well, you know, Henry Smith here is in the chat room has a beef. He's like, the common movie lover cliche, everything is awful because this person has high standards and sees a lot of movies. There was a lot of hand-wringing by critics this summer about how movies are dead. Everyone's talking about Stranger Things. No one gives a shit about, you know, Secret Life of Pets, like, or Suicide Squad. Like, other TV has a much better way of, like, influencing culture than movies do. I think there are good movies, guys. There are awesome movies.
Oh, no, there are great movies.
They're just not
summer.
On the top 10 of the summer.
Yeah. Right. That's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, man, there were some great, like, Swiss Army Man. There's so many other ones.
I would say, if you're looking, I just pulled up last year, right? Last year, Inside Out, great. Mission Impossible 5, great. Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, okay, there you go. Looking good.
Those three movies are extraordinary.
Yes.
Plus, I mean, a lot of people really like Jurassic World. I know, Dave, you're not one of them. I happen to really like Avengers Age of Ultron.
Ant-Man was, I think, a good movie, really fun. So, you know.
And so you're right. There's a couple in there. You're absolutely right. I just feel like we always overestimate how good they're all going to be based on marketing, just based on our movie fandom. You know, we want them all to be great. I mean, that's one of those things that's been the argument this whole year with movie criticism and stuff is, oh, man, you know, well, critics want to hate a movie. It's like, and which obviously I'm sure you guys have talked about a million times. It's not the case. We just
But out of this top 10 list, I think the only films we can agree, the collective group of us that are quote unquote good, are Finding Dory, Captain America, and Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Sure.
And I'm not saying that like you love Finding Dory or whatever, but like those are like the other movies.
Those are the only movies that were tolerable.
Those are the only movies that one of us, the four of us, doesn't hate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Five of us. Yeah.
Yeah. So, rough year, a lot of difficult stuff to predict, but overall I thought we did pretty well, guys. Pretty well compared to years past. I agree that in terms of this list, the top 10 of the summer, it's a lesser list in terms of quality than it was like last year. But still some good movies to be found this summer. You just need to look a little bit harder.
Dave, what are the points?
Let's go through the points, guys. Let's go through the point totals. Why Jeff Cannata, you're so number excited. Of points.
I don't know.
Your number of points, Jeff.
I got 45 points, Dave. Thanks for it. But you know what's
good enough
good
to
thing?
Win last year. Good enough to
good enough to win. You know what? And I'm going to go ahead and enter myself into last year at 45. The good news is, I mean, I don't want to spoil Devendra's points, but the good news is neither of us were at the bottom because we have each other.
Devendra, what were your number of points?
I also had 45 points, and we formed the 45-point club, and we're very happy.
How about you, Jermaine?
And you guys can't join it.
I have 48 points. We call us the Alistair Looking Glass Club, who comes in third place.
Peter Serena.
I had 50 points, Dave.
And me, David Chen, for the second year in a row, win the Summer Movie Wager, this time with 61 points, which, by the way, I feel compelled to point out, is the highest score of all time in the history of the Summer Movie Wager.
It beats Dan Trachtenberg?
I believe that is correct. I barely squeaked out a win at 61 points because I think Dan had 60 points. Wow. So by one point,
your dark horse of Legend of Tarzan.
That's right, Legend of Tarzan.
Legend of Tarzan does it.
Wow. Legend of Tarzan made me the number one highest scoring person of all time.
Guess you should see that movie, huh?
In the summer movie feature. Yes, that's right.
See it.
That's right. I still am. Again, like I said, I'm a little bitter that my victory was even more decisive because I could have had four dead on,
and yet you
or five dead on.
So as a previous back-to-back two-time winner, from one to another, I'll say congratulations.
Thank you.
We see if you can three-peat next year. That would be the true achievement.
Yep.
But you may be the winner, but I think Peter Serretta won our hearts. I think when we look back to the summer of 2016 Movie Wager, what are people going to remember? They're going to remember that Finding Dory number one moonshot that he nailed. They're not going to remember who won because he won our hearts, David.
Okay.
I bet Dave's going to remember who won.
I think I'm going to remember. So I think here's where Peter Serretta went wrong. Let's just like I don't want to belabor this, but I just think this is a little interesting.
I don't want to belabor this, but I'm
but
going
I'm, belabor
but
this,
I'm
but
about
I'm
to. So Peter Serretta guessed Finding Dory and Captain America as his number one and two choices, Suicide Squad number three, which came in number four. So he was pretty close on that. But then he chose Independence Day Resurgence as number four, which was like – it didn't even make the top 10. So that cost him a lot of points. And then Alice Through the Looking Glass and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as number 9 and 10 for him, neither of which made the top 10 either. So he had basically three spots in his top 10.
And I didn't have Jason Bourne on my top 10 either.
That's right. So he had three spots in his top 10 that like were basically not on – the list at all, on the final list at all, and he didn't include Jason Bourne. So, like, even though that was an amazing choice, he still didn't wasn't able to capitalize on that, unfortunately, with the rest of his list.
Yeah, he capitalized on my heart, though, Dave. He won my heart.
He's a home run hitter with a 200 average.
That's right. He swings for the fences.
All right, guys. So, as part of our agreement for the Summer Movie Wager –
We
agree that I would get to choose a thing that you guys would watch under 3 hours long, And you know, guys, on September 19th, 2016, about 2 weeks ago, Devin Faraci at Birth, Movies, Death published this article that I thought was extraordinary.
Oh, no.
The title of this article was, "It Turns Out Gods of Egypt Was Awesome."
No!
You know, I've been waiting to actually see this, Dave.
Here's the difference between you and I.
I saw it in the theater, and now I got to watch it again.
Here's the difference between you and I. I would have taken, if I had won, I would have taken my opportunity to show you guys something that I love.
Yeah. Jeff would have enlightened us.
What makes you think I don't love Gods of Egypt? I'm really upset at kind of the
Dave
implication
is trying
here.
To punish us.
I'm really upset at the implication here, Jeff, that you think I don't think you'll enjoy Gods of Egypt. This article, Jeff, Gods of Egypt was awesome. That's what Devin Faraci says. He is
awesome in its horribleness.
I think you should read the article, Jeff. You should read the article because
Lord knows I always agree with Devin Faraci.
Yeah. So I agree with Devin, and so therefore I order you to watch Gods of Egypt, guys.
God. I have a child, Dave. Think of the child.
I will say that I told some people about this today, and they got really excited that you guys would be watching Gods of Egypt that we'd likely be talking about on the Slash Film.
In all honesty, I probably would have seen it at some point, but do we have to do a review of it now, too?
We don't have to, but I think we have to.
I think all of us, Peter and
Jermaine, yeah.
Jermaine. Yeah. Sorry, my brain's not working.
That's my name, yeah. You have a kid, Jeff.
I know.
No sleep.
Gods of Egypt, the latest film by Alex Proyas, is amazing. And therefore, I think we'll be watching it and talking about it here on the Slash Homecast.
Did you guys have choices lined up in case you won?
No.
Yeah, Jeff, what was this thing that you would have been able to watch that you loved so
Dave?
Much?
Because 2 months before it was even over, I was being told I had 0% chance.
Yeah,
to win.
So one of the great things about Dennis's website is he calculated percentage chance that every person had to win, and in early August, Jeff's chances were less than 0.1% of winning. So at that point, I think he basically gave up hope of anything.
Well, it gives you enough time to learn not to care, basically, right?
All right, guys. Thanks for participating this year, and I'm looking forward to the three-peat next year. Should be a lot of fun. Jermaine Lucier is getting married a couple weeks from now.
Yeah.
So congratulations in advance, Jermaine. But in the meantime, when you're not getting married, where can people find more of your work on the internet this week?
You can find my stuff at io9.com and Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Jermaine Lucier.
How about you, Peter Serretta?
You can find me at slashfilm.com and twitter.com/film.
And you guys already know where to find all of our stuff. Thanks for listening to the official podcast of slashfilm.com. We'll see you guys next year for Summer Movie Wager 2017.